what they saw. That they are doing this because they live under occupation.
To know more about this movement that is rising among the Israeli soldiers, we travel to Israel. Here we are going to meet former soldiers and officers that helped to keep the occupant of Palestine alive. From Tel Aviv, we take the road. Our destination, Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron, Palestine. This route, like 80% of the total highway system in the West Bank, is forbidden to Palestinians. Built on private Palestinian land, these highways bisect through villages, dividing families and boxing Palestinians into enclaves. We want to reach the Al-Khalil city centre. After exposing the Israeli army crimes, Nadav, a former infantry combat soldier, is going to meet us here, in the ground zero of the occupation.
My name is Nadav Diegelman. I'm originally from Jerusalem. I served in the IDF, in the 5th Battalion of the Nachal Brigade as an infantry. And I reached here for the first time when I was wearing a uniform and holding a gun when I was in the army. And I was shocked. I was shocked that a reality like this could happen 40 minutes from my house. The settlers here are an issue. Yeah, we're talking about 850 settlers. They're being protected by around 500 to 600 security forces in any given day. So around the settlements, there are areas that Palestinians cannot move to secure the settlers. And there's a lot of violence that comes from the settlers.
Welcome to Al-Khalil. Al-Khalil is the ground zero for the illegal Israeli settler movement, radical Zionism and violence. Radical settlers have taken over parts of Old City. Palestinian neighborhoods and the economy were destroyed. Settlers are free to kill and terrorize Palestinians. Oh. 850 Zionist settlers set down in the Al-Khalil city center. Palestinians were expelled. They now live surrounded by a fence or a cage from where they cannot move. If you want to know what occupation really means, you should come to Al-Khalil. We are a potential target for the Jewish settlers' hate. We have a camera, and our guide is a former soldier that has broken his silence. Traitor, according to the settlers.
This is a picture that was taken in the late 90s in this street that we are on now, and I think this tells the whole story, how hundreds and thousands of people, Palestinians, left here. We're talking about 42% of the housing units of Palestinians around the settlement were abandoned. 1,800 shops of Palestinians were shut down. The shops we see here next to us, part of them. Hundreds were shut down by the army. Hundreds were shut down by the Palestinians.
Al-Khalil is divided into two parts. H1 and H2, drawing a line between the settlements and the rest of the city. Palestinians are not allowed anywhere near H2. Shuhada, the main Al-Khalil street, was once a bustling market and residential neighborhood. Today, Shuhada is a ghost area. Only settlers can cross it. Palestinians are forbidden to approach Shuhada.
This is an important place because, first of all, this used to go back and forth to the markets, the other side. We came from over there, it's basically all shut down. There is nothing, everything is shut down. Most of the families left, except one family. That family was able, up until a few years ago, to walk through here as well. Now that it's sealed, they also need to go all the way from around. Another gate here that the soldiers need to open. But this is just one, you know, very small example of how shutting down of roads to Palestinian movement.
August 2016. Israeli soldiers are entering Palestinian houses in Al-Khalil. An activist follows them with a camera.
Can you tell me why you're entering Palestinian houses?
We are doing our job.
Okay, what job? What exactly are you trying to achieve? Because these are people, they live here, right? It's not your homes.
This time, the Israeli army steps back. Soldiers don't want witnesses. Reach Al-Khalil's main square, a forbidden territory for the Palestinians. What we're about to see is part of the occupation daily routine. A 15-year-old Palestinian girl is arrested in a checkpoint. She is taken inside a police station and disappears for some time. She is accused of trying to stab a soldier. When she is taken outside, her hands are tied and she is heavily guarded by soldiers and police. She is left under the sun for hours. And this is what happens next. For this Palestinian teenager, this is just the beginning of a long nightmare. An Israeli police officer takes photos of the girl in the middle of the street, in front of everybody. Finally, she is taken away. She will be taken to a military base, will face a military court, and will end in a military jail. To learn more about the future of this Palestinian teenager, we should travel to Jerusalem Al-Quds. We're going to meet Gerard Horton, a lawyer and co-founder of Military Court Watch.
It's an organization of mostly lawyers, Palestinian, Israeli, English, Australian, American lawyers, focusing on the prosecution of children in Israeli military courts. Under the laws of war, if you're going to try civilians in a situation of occupation, it is a military court that does it. That situation is supposed to be temporary. And we're now approaching the 50th anniversary of the occupation. No one envisaged that a situation of occupation would go on for that length of time. Approximately 800 to 1,000 children are detained each year. The most common offence they're prosecuted for is throwing stones. At least half of the children are detained in the middle of the night. The moment you hear the knock on the door, banging on the front door, from that moment on, it's a fairly terrifying experience for the next 12 to 24 hours. You might wake up to an explosion. Get out of bed, you find armed, heavily armed soldiers in your house. If you have younger siblings, they will be crying, terrified, seeing all these soldiers. Sometimes there are dogs with the soldiers as well. The parents generally will be arguing with the commander, trying to get information. Why are you in my house? Why are you arresting my son? Have his hands tied with plastic ties, frequently very tightly. The more you struggle, the tighter they get, so they become very painful. You'll be blindfolded. Parents will not be told where you're being taken to or why you're being arrested. The children report they're put on the metal floor of the military vehicle. The soldiers will sit on the seats and the Palestinian detainees will be on the metal floor. Only the soldiers will put their boots, their feet on the individuals, kicking, punching. In the middle of the night, taken out, left outside on the floor, tied and blindfolded, or put in a shipping container. If they try to sleep, they're slapped to keep them awake, so they're sleep-deprived by the time they get to the interrogation center. Sometimes when they ask to use the toilet, they're not allowed to use the toilet. O'clock in the morning or so, they'll be put back in the military vehicle, taken to an interrogation center. Usually they won't have slept. They may have been slapped around a little bit, nothing to eat or drink generally. Psychologically, they'll be in a very scared condition. The interrogator will start conducting the interrogation in a fairly intimidatory manner. Often will approach the child. The interrogators are often quite physically large individuals, particularly compared to the child. In many cases, the child will remain tied during the interrogation, so obviously it's a very intimidating position to be in. The interrogators frequently then will shout at the child, threaten the child, threaten the child's family. Almost in every case, the interrogator will tell the child that the other children we arrested with you, they've all confessed and we've sent them home. So it's pointless you resisting any further. So after half an hour, most children will provide a confession. The overwhelming majority of children do not get to consult with a lawyer prior to their interrogation, and they're not informed of their right to silence. Interrogate the child in Arabic and document it in Hebrew. Then the Hebrew statement is given to the child to sign. It may be accurate, it may not be. There's no way for that child to tell. Whether the child says he's innocent or not, generally the lawyer will advise the child to plead guilty, even if he says he's innocent. If the child wants to maintain his innocence and challenge the evidence, in most cases the court will deny the child bail, which means he will sit in prison waiting for the case to come on for hearing. So the quickest way to get out of this system, even if you're innocent, is to simply plead guilty. In addition to that, your parents will be fined. The fining serves a very useful process. If the army is faced with a village that is throwing a lot of stones...
Every time somebody throwing rocks, we see this kid. We remember his face. If I see his face again, I don't care if I see him throw rocks or not, he's going to go with us.
I am asking this Listen to me.
He's going to go with me, and he's going to be tied up all night, and he's going to get punished, and you're going to need a pay to take him back.
Then the army will keep going into that village, rounding people up. Some of them will have thrown stones. Some of the people they round up won't have thrown stones. It doesn't matter. You round people up, you put them through the military court, you fine the parents, and you bankrupt the village until they stop resisting.
So many attacks on settlers, I mean, to justify all these.
Not a single settler was killed in the West Bank in 2012. I think it's a real mark of the success of the military strategy that in 2012, out of 400,000 Israeli civilians living, going shopping, taking their children to school, whatever normal people do in their daily lives, none of them were killed living in occupied territory. And I think America tried to do something similar in Afghanistan, moved 400,000 American civilians into Kandahar province and told them to build towns and villages. I think the casualty would be very high.
From Jerusalem, Al-Quds, we take the way to Beit Fajar. The town rests on a hilltop overlooking a large area of the West Bank that stretches from Al-Khalil to Bethlehem. Surrounded by five illegal Jewish settlements, the daily life in Beit Fajar is a nightmare of arrests, kidnappings and night raids. Arrests and detainments have become a powerful mechanism that the Zionist regime uses to force the population into submission. At the age of 14, Issam has already experienced interrogations and a military court. Al-Khalil is one of the most demanding places for a soldier to be posted to. Young Israelis, some still teenagers, are in the front line of the occupation. We are about to learn that, in the near future, things can only get worse.
Hey? Don't touch me.
These kids are the future generation of Jewish settlers in Palestinian land. Harassed by the young settlers, we decided to move away. But they came with a mission and would not give up. They would do anything to stop us. They were sent by the older settlers to do their job.
Don't even think to touch me.
Don't touch me.
The soldiers have clear orders from their commanders. They cannot touch the settlers, no matter what they do. The young settlers will follow us to make sure we leave Al-Khalil without telling the story. The soldiers are afraid of them and of the reaction of the settlers' community in Al-Khalil, who are heavily armed and live above and beyond the law. The young settler says Nadav is a traitor and tries to attack him.
Hey, don't touch me. I'm putting my hand here.
We have to leave Al-Khalil for security reasons.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked among
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulema's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned. Sometimes we do not have enough courtesy towards the Holy Quran. This is because we do not have a clear understanding about the high status of the Quran. For instance, when the Quran is open, we stretch our legs in front of it. Or after our recitation is finished, we have the Quran on the ground. We are recommended to put the Quran on a high place. Also, we are told to put the Quran on a book rack and then read it out. These are all signs of respect and courtesy for the Holy Quran.
گاهی موقع
بعضی هم میگن حاج آقا تو روایات ما هست که اگه کسی مثلا سوره یاسین رو بخونه فلان اثر رو داره.
Sometimes the people are looking for the effects of the Quran in their lives without having enough respect for it. This way, they cannot reach the divine truth of the Holy Quran. Respect and being polite in the presence of the Quran is the very basic step to recognize the high status of the Holy Quran in our lives. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, believing in Allah. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the importance of believing in Allah while living in a society in the Islamic lifestyle. We can see that because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the creator of all, and He is the Khaliq and Raziq. He is the creator, He is the one who provides sustenance Therefore, it is necessary to think that Allah is in the core or of everything. So when we are socializing with the people, when we talk about the society, our life in the society, or when we want to socialize, therefore it is necessary to think about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, to do everything for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and for the happiness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And if we can do that, then obviously we can have a good society. We can have a pure society. We can have a society which is taking its people towards the perfection. And that's what it is being considered when a human being is being created as a human, and when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had made these relations for us, the family that we have, the tribes, the groups. Obviously, we are divided into different groups, into tribes, into different colors. We have countries, obviously. So therefore, when we are socializing in a society and when we talk about this social aspect of the life of a human being, Islam plays an important role. And the core of everything is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that we need to perform everything in order to get his nearness and to avoid the sins and bad deeds in the society, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the concept of having Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, or God, in the core of everything, especially in the social life. And from Imam Ali alayhi salam, it is said that when Sa'asa bin Sohan went to Imam alayhi salam, Imam advised him about the social life, the political and social activities that he has to do. And he said, وَلْيَكُنْ تَعَاوُنُكُمْ عَلَىٰ طَاعَةِ اللَّهِ. You should coordinate with the people. You need to help each other. It is upon you to do that according to the will of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The cooperation, the coordination, the life, the social life should be according to the obedience of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And therefore, the people in the society should not commit sin. And that's why it is forbidden to perform things in front of others. Obviously, there are consequences if someone performs a sin in the society. Because if someone is damaging the society with not following the rules of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with not following the commands of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he is putting a negative effect in the people. For example, if a lady is not observing the hijab in front of people, obviously she is performing a sin, and therefore there will be other people who will follow them. Therefore, it is forbidden. That's why it is said that the woman, when she's at the home, obviously she is free to not to have the hijab or to have the hijab, but it's something which is personal to her. But whenever she comes out in the street, she must have hijab, especially if it is the Islamic society. And on the other hand, there are many other things we can have, many examples. For example, drinking alcohol. If a person has the habit, unfortunately, to perform such a sin, and if he does that alone at the home, where no one can see him, there are consequences for him. There is a punishment which is near Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But when he performs it in the society, then obviously he is damaging the society, and there are the harder consequences, and the government should come into action. So therefore, we need to believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and try to build a society that is following the orders of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
Donald Trump's last White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, has accused the Congressional Committee investigating the U.S. Capitol attack of leaking all the text messages that he provided in what he says is an effort to vilify him publicly. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff writers at the Associated Press. The piece is titled, Mark Meadows Claims U.S. Capitol Attack Panel Leaked Text to Vilify Him. Donald Trump's last White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, has accused the Congressional Committee investigating the U.S. Capitol attack of leaking all the text messages that he provided in what he says is an effort to vilify him publicly. The argument was made in a court filing on Friday, 29th of April, in a federal court in Washington, where Mark Meadows sued in December to invalidate subpoenas issued for his testimony and to Verizon for his cell phone records. In this latest court filing, lawyers asked a judge to reject the committee's request for a ruling that could force Mark Meadows to comply with the subpoenas. The committee requested an expedited briefing schedule on Wednesday, 27th of April, after filing its motion the previous week. The lawyers say Mark Meadows deserves a chance through the fact-gathering process known as discovery, to gather information about questions still in dispute, such as the committee's claims that Donald Trump did not properly invoke executive privilege over the items subpoenaed because he did not communicate that position directly. Mr. Meadows cannot possibly know whether that unsupported contention is true without discovery, or whether the select committee had awareness of former President Trump's assertions, the motion states. It adds that Mark Meadows must have the ability to obtain any communications between the committee and Donald Trump, and possibly to take depositions of people familiar with those discussions. The House of Representatives voted in December to hold Mark Meadows in criminal contempt after he ceased cooperating, referring the matter to the Justice Department, which has not said if it will take action. Mark Meadows' legal team has said he provided extensive cooperation, but that the House committee refused to respect Donald Trump's assertion of executive privilege. The motion by Mark Meadows also accuses the committee of waging a sustained media campaign against him. Though it does not provide evidence, it says the committee has leaked all of the text messages that Mark Meadows has produced. The congressional defendants, under the auspices of a legitimate subpoena, induced Mr. Meadows to produce thousands of his private communications, only to use them in a concerted and ongoing effort to vilify him publicly through the media, Mark Meadows' attorney, George Terwilliger, wrote in the motion. Court filings by the committee have shown Meadows was in regular contact before 6th of January 2021 with Republican allies who advanced false claims of election fraud and supported overturning the race won by Joe Biden. A court filing a week ago cited testimony from a White House aide who said Mark Meadows was advised there could be violence on 6th of January 2021. The committee declined through a spokesperson to comment about Mark Meadows' accusations against the panel. Meanwhile, stakes are high for Republicans in Ohio as they try to hold on to retiring Senator Rob Portman's seat and ultimately regain control of the evenly divided upper chamber of U.S. Congress. The Republican candidate who wins the 3rd of May primary will probably face off against Democratic Congressman Tim Ryan in the general election. The Republican primary winner, whoever it is, will then be favored to win in November, considering Donald Trump defeated Joe Biden in Ohio by 8 percentage points in 2020. For Donald Trump, the Ohio Senate election also represents the biggest test yet of his most influential tool as party leader, a primary endorsement. Donald Trump's endorsement of J.D. Vance, best-selling author of the memoir Hillbilly Elegy, was considered a gamble, given that J.D. Vance has been trailing in the limited public polling of the race. Before Donald Trump's announcement, former state treasurer Josh Mandel and businessman Mike Gibbons were widely considered the two frontrunners in the primary race. But a new opinion poll released this week showed J.D. Vance pulling ahead of Josh Mandel and Mike Gibbons. Now Vance is counting on Donald Trump's endorsement to carry him to victory in Ohio's Senate Republican primary.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint.
A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program, in which we try to talk about some of the latest movies and then criticize them based on the theme that we have in mind. Sitting along with me is Sayyid Abdullah and also Brother Hussein. Sayyid Abdullah, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah and thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Brother Hussein, assalamu alaikum and welcome to the studio.
Wa alaikum assalam. Glad to be here.
Welcome. Well, today we decided to work on a very nice movie by the name of Patriot's Day. It's a 2016 movie or produced in this year and directed by Peter Berg. And, of course, the story comes from the same person and based on a true event, if I'm not mistaken. And it's about two brothers, in fact, planting a bomb or planning to plant a bomb during the
Boston Marathon. So they caused hell of a panic among people. And then an FBI agent, along with the police officers and forces, joined forces and, let's say, investigate to find and defuse some of the bombs. Before we talk about this movie and the beginning of our critique of this movie with Brother Hossein and Sayyid Abdullah, let's take a short listen to a part of this movie or a trailer of this movie, and then we'll be back criticizing it.
It's terrorism.
We'll take it.
And let's get an evidence grid started right over there.
Clock is ticking. The world is watching.
The suspect seen on the surveillance cameras. Two bombers.
We gotta find these guys before they do this to someone else.
We can't have our citizens on the streets with all these threats. Every inch of this city is getting searched. We're shutting it down.
A taxi picked up a guy matching White Hat's description. Could be he's on his way to New York.
Are there more bombs?
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program, in which we try to criticize the movies, not necessarily based on the movie artistic features, usually based on their themes, such as this one and the previous movie that we try to give a critique about. Today in this episode, we are trying to criticize the movie Patriot's Day. It's a 2016 movie and directed by Peter Berg. Before I ask you about how you like the movie, the Rotten Tomatoes holds an approval rating of 81% with the average of 6.9 out of 10. And then the Metacritic gives an average score of 69 out of 100 and Cinema Score an average grade of A plus on an A to F scale. Brother Hossein, let me start with you this time. How would you like the movie?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brother, I actually enjoyed this one. It was I quite liked it. It was kind of like a documentary movie type of film, and it had all that like movie Hollywood movie type of feel to it. But also, it was a documentary based on like true events, right?
Yes.
Also had a lot of prominent actors, which was interesting to see.
Yes.
Mark Wahlberg being one of them. Also, lots of action, lots of explosions, big ones. I kind of like that. And one thing I noticed that was very interesting was the attention to detail.
Yes.
Which really made it, you know, a masterpiece.
All right. Thank you very much. Sayyid Abdullah, how did you like the movie? Did you... give it an approval or positive approval?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The movie was okay. I mean, nothing special. For me, it was a little bit slow paced. You know, considering that they're trying to film a true event, so there has to be like a drama added to extend the movie itself.
Yes.
Which kind of, I think, gave it a bit of, made it a bit slower, a more dramatic than what it should have, what it should have been. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a thriller kind of events.
Yes.
So that's the kind of part that threw me off. Beside that, it was okay. It was watchable.
Nice. Okay. Let's take a listen, in fact, to a part of this movie, Patriot's Day, produced in 2016. Directed by Peter Berg, and we'll be back criticizing that part.
Well, I'm really excited that we're taking the day off tomorrow. But I think after my masterpiece pizza, we're gonna have to go on a run at some point.
Tomorrow? No, yeah. Honey, there's three things you can do on Patriot's Day. One's watch the marathon, the other one's run the marathon, and the third one is get down to Fenway and yell for those Red Sox.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. Well, the movie that we are trying to criticize in this episode is Patriot's Day. It's produced in 2016, directed by Peter Berg, starring many characters and good actors and actresses, such as Mark Wahlberg, Kevin Bacon, John Goodman, J.K. Simmons, and Michelle Monaghan. Brother Hossein, in that part, we can't do anything else because there's this... talk between the woman and in fact her husband about the Patriots Day. Yeah. And they are suggesting that, they can't do anything else except like to go and attend the marathon themselves, like in person, and see the event like face to face. And they can't watch it like, for example, on TV, or they can't do anything else basically, like except to pay close attention to this day and the marathon whatsoever. And we all know that, you know, there are some institutes or institutions which are like responsible for the culture of the society usually. So they know how to build the culture, especially we are talking about the movie industry. Uh-huh. And this is what the movie industry is all about in the first place, in addition to the money, of course, economy-wise. Despite that, you know, why is this event so important? Why do they want to highlight and make it so significant?
Well, I think it really goes back to its traditional roots in the city of Boston itself, mm-hmm. right? Like it's a traditional thing. A lot of people do it. And mm-hmm. if you're living there, yes. well, you should actually go if you can. Rather than staying at home watching it on TV, mm-hmm. so I think it's trying to promote that whole, you know, you are part of this community and you should participate in events like this.
Yes, thank you. Okay, before again I ask Sayyid Abdullah a question, stay with us for another part of this movie, and then we'll be back criticizing this part of the movie, Patriots Day, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Yeah, but what about like Eric and Rafi and Brennan and those guys? I mean, those guys were friends, so it's like...
Don't think about it. It doesn't matter.
Bro, I'm not pussing out or nothing. I'm not at all. Just thinking about like Martin Luther King and like...
Martin Luther King was not a Muslim. He was a hypocrite. He was a fornicator.
Yeah, but I'm a fornicator.
You think that's funny?
No.
Come here.
What? What?
You're my brother. You understand that?
Yeah.
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio. In this episode, we were criticizing the movie Patriots Day, produced in 2016, directed by Peter Berg. I promised you, my dear audience, to ask Sayyid Abdullah this question. Sayyid Abdullah, in this part, the terrorists think they are the only ones saved. All right? If you pay close attention to what they are saying together, and these two brothers I'm talking about, right? And they are the only believers available, you know, on the earth, and others, they think of them as deviated or driven by Satan and the like, especially the Westerners, you know, and corrupt, basically. So they decide to, especially the mastermind behind, I mean, the older brother, of course, is trying to convince his, like, a smaller brother, a younger brother, to kill the Westerners because of this, because they are corrupt and they are not, like, true believers, just like them. They are deviated, so they got to be killed. They got to be, like, wiped off the face of the earth. How do one become so radical in their idea and philosophy?
It's easy. Even when the brother said to him, he said something along, we have to kill all these fornicators. And the brother said to him, I'm a fornicator.
Yes.
And
yes.
He kind of, you know, he said to him, it's not a joke, right?
Yeah.
But the brother was serious. I'm like, I mean, it's a human nature to sin. Mm-hmm. I mean, to commit blasphemy is yes. one thing. To commit a sin is another. Now, being radicalized is an easy job, sadly, especially these days. It's easy to format and program people, especially those who don't have a background themselves, like in, let's say, in theology or in at least Islamic theology, since these guys yes. claim to be Muslims. So we in Islam, and this is like a very dangerous thing, We have such slogans in terms of killing other people.
Mm-hmm.
They're very powerful and very motivating too, right? So you can take chapters or verses from the Quran,
yes,
or verses from the Hadith where Allah talks about, or the Prophet talks about killing the infidels,
mm-hmm,
and the rewards for it. And it's empowering for those who don't understand the context of it, mm-hmm, right? For example, we have many verses in the Quran.
You mean they are open to interpretation and twist and turn, right?
Not just open to interpretation, because if you just take a verse itself and by itself, right, without understanding the context of it,
the literal meaning
is very dangerous.
Yes.
Right? Especially if you believe in Allah,
uh-huh,
and we have sort of blind belief in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
We don't question Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, unlike,
yes,
other religions. We don't question it. So when you throw a verse at me, and if you have a way of getting that verse to me, it's like putting fire on oil,
mm-hmm,
or on petrol.
Yes.
It just lights up. So like I said, we have so many verses in the Quran about killing infidels and jihad, but all these verses were to specific events.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't general. Allah,
yes,
subhanahu wa ta'ala never in the Quran allows people to kill innocent people.
Yes.
So if you take each verse itself and you look at the context of it, you look at the event, you see it talks about something else.
Yes.
But if you take it by itself and give it to someone who doesn't know anything,
mm-hmm,
that will just not just radicalize them, it just makes them like, you know, like a ticking bomb.
Yes,
and
exactly.
This is what we see.
It's so easy to be distorted.
So for any Muslim who believes in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and has that blind faith, mm-hmm, in Allah subhanahu,
yes,
wa ta'ala, it's very easy to program them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and all these terrorists and all these masterminds, they know how to work with the youth.
I see.
It's easy to pinpoint the problems of the West.
Yes.
And the mistakes of the West and the sins of the West and show them what Allah wants on earth. And they say, they're like, okay, now I have a duty. It's no longer, mm-hmm, like,
yes,
a matter of choice. It's a duty. I need to purify earth from,
yes,
all these infidels. So it's very easy. All you have to do is just pick verses and throw them at people, and that's it.
It comes from basically what you're saying, the ignorance of those,
obviously,
people.
Obviously.
Yes.
Not just ignorance. So ignorance is one part.
Yes.
The other part is their devotion to the religion itself.
Uh-huh.
So they are so, when it comes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and believing in Allah, they are so devoted to Allah,
right,
and to the cause of Allah subhanahu,
mm-hmm,
wa ta'ala. They,
mm-hmm,
want to do something.
I see.
So
okay,
when a wrong person comes along, so ignorance and the devotion, they come hand in hand and you have a bomb.
Yes, I see. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Hussein, for your nice contribution to this program, Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. We tried in this episode to criticize the movie Patriot's Day, produced in 2016, directed by Peter Berg. And we hope to continue criticizing this movie in the upcoming episodes. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
What I saw today, good versus evil, love versus hate, there's only one weapon you have to fight back with. It's love. Wrap our arms around each other. I don't think there's any way that they could ever win.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.